Number one.
From the number one college town in the Big 12.
Big 12.
We're back with the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State fam, y'all know what time it is. The Purple Project Podcast here in Manhattan, Kansas. That's where I live. Eddie Greer, host of Triple P, Kansas State Athletics Podcast, where we talk, usually, always, about K-State Athletics. Here, recording on this rainy, rainy day here in the MHK, Wednesday, March 17th, 2021, recording this podcast, the weekly edition. You know what day this comes out, Friday afternoon usually, so be out on the lookout for that. Well, spring ball's heating up. The basketball season's abruptly come to a close for one team. We kind of already talked about the boys a little bit, but we're going to put that all to a close in the second half of this podcast, as well as do a little Big 12 teams in the tournament, obviously, seven of them, and we'll talk about them as well before I bring on my co-host for the podcast, obviously, the Purple Project Podcast. You find it wherever you get your podcast. Y'all know what to do. It's right there, obviously, so be out on the lookout for those. And then, obviously, if you missed out on the latest episodes of the podcast, please go down to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Reno.com, and more. Check those out. Very good content. As well, there's been already been posted a couple dailies from this week, including just a couple of hours ago about the baseball team. So definitely go check that out. But for now, it's time to bring on our co-host here. He doesn't live here in Manhattan. You know where he lives at. San Diego, California. None other than Double A. Alex, what's going on?
Not too much going on, Eddie. Same old. Out here in San Diego. I was telling you before on air. We must have got your rain earlier in the week because it was a rainy day on Monday here. But it is back to San Diego weather today. I want to, Eddie, just step back for a moment. I know we kind of had a cliffhanger when we were on the show last, we'll talk about this later in the show. But you know, cliffhanger with the men's team, the men's basketball team on your, you know. They had that really good game against TCU, but, you know, how will they do against, you know, Baylor? This is going to be really, you know, a great measuring point for them, you know, to really gauge kind of how much they've grown. And, you know, and I just want to, you know, step back and give them an applause for that.
Because yes, yes.
I got to give them an applause. You lost, but if there's any such thing as a moral victory, that was probably it. That was probably it because I think that they emphatically answered our first question about defense. You know, did they really improve as much on defense as we think they have? Yes, they absolutely have. They were flying around the court against Baylor on defense. And they made Baylor's life really difficult when they were in offense. And trust me, Baylor only scoring 74 points. That's something to be proud of because Baylor averages 80. By the game, I think it's 85 points a game they average. They were 11 points under their average, so you got to give them credit there. K-State had another pretty good day shooting the ball for the way that they shoot it. You know, Mike McGurl doesn't get a field goal, I don't think, at the game, and K-State's still right there with a chance with 10, 15 seconds left in the game. You know, just shows you how far they've come. So, you know, I don't think the season could have ended any better for the K-State men's team than beating TCU by 21 and then taking Baylor wire-to-wire for 40 minutes in the Sprint, not Sprint Center, T-Mobile Center, I'm sorry. So, you know, tip of the cap to the men's team. Like I said, we'll talk about that later, but I think they deserve props. I think they deserve props for the way that they ended, and there's no doubt. There's no doubt. When you heard them speak after the game, or Bruce speak after the game, the players, you know, they ended the season Pacers with a ton of momentum. You know, they got wins. They played way more competitive basketball, and they're feeling. You can tell they're feeling a lot better going into this offseason than they would have if it fit into a month ago. So, you know, hopefully that will that will help them moving forward. But I just want to give them their props. Give them their props for the way that they fought and battled against Baylor, because it was mighty impressive. I know that Baylor, you know, may not be the team right now that they were before they had their second COVID stint, but still, that's still a really, really, really good basketball team that, spoiler alert, I have them in the Final Four. So, just saying, spoiler, I know, I'm sorry. I didn't spoil it all, Eddie. You don't know where I haven't passed the Final Four, but kudos to K-State. Hopefully they can carry that momentum into the offseason, and they brought a little optimism to us. And you mentioned it, Eddie. You and I mentioned it, building blocks. Build a foundation, Just got to build it, one block at a time. So, you add another block to the foundation.
That's right. Yep, and I pretty much said the same things already that you said already on one of the dailies last week. Yeah, and that it took them pretty much quite a long ways to get there, but very, very impressive. Yes, the K-State basketball team did lose, but what an effort. And I had traveling for work most of the time, so yeah, I had the opportunity to listen to the game, and they played Baylor very, very well. So yeah, a lot to build on. We'll finish that talk a bit later, and I know I'm going to bounce around a little bit here, going kind of off track here. The baseball team, obviously we're recording this, and I failed to mention this top. I'm going to go ahead and mention this now. We're recording this on St. Patrick's Day. Green. K-State baseball team apparently is going to be rocking their green unis on Friday against New Mexico, starting their series off, 3-game set here in Twinton Family Stadium on Friday. So, already took a look at the at the uniforms, and they look not too bad. I mean, it's green and purple. I mean, it's not the best combination, but looking at these pictures here.
That's a pretty ugly combo, and I can say it from seeing it every single year in Manhattan when St. Patrick's Day rolls around. Seeing the shirts with the green and the purple, it's not a great look. But hey, I'm glad that there'll be sporting out there. And also, Eddie, I'll just step back and just give it a little round of applause to the baseball team as well. They had a nice weekend. Down in Houston. I think we were curious how they were going to perform in that kind of odd 4 games in 3 days against a couple different teams there. I thought they played both teams really well. You come out of there and you win 3 of 4, I believe, is what they took down there.
That's the ones that's up now. Yep.
And your only loss was a 1-run loss to Rice, and you only gave up 1 run in that game too. You just couldn't get your offense going. So all in all, they went down. They did a really nice job down there. So they continue to play really well. So they deserve kudos. We'll see if they can continue it on Friday with that series in Manhattan.
Yep, that's right. And that daily is up right now. So go check that out. My kind of little summary about the K-State baseball team. They're 11-5 heading into the 3-game set this weekend against New Mexico State. Speaking of which, transferring onto the football side of things now here on the Triple P podcast here. Obviously, spring football is currently still in session, and we're going to talk a little bit more on the defense next week. I want to save that for next week, but kind of focusing on the offense because they're getting a little bit of the limelight here this week so far. Obviously, we noted some of the changes in the previous episodes of the podcast. Courtney Messingham being in charge now of the wide receivers, while Jason Ray takes over the fullbacks, tight ends to this point. And there are a couple, we've discussed this a little bit before. I hit the record button, Alex, on for the podcast tonight. And there are a couple of names that are standing out. And Daniel Ima-Obebe is one of those players, and his name's been coming up a lot in tweets and in the press conferences. So he's one of the new potential tight ends here going in. obviously, to the fall. And obviously, we talk about the moment. Speaking of a little momentum going into the next season, Malik Knowles, obviously well documented last season, hampered by injuries, not catching passes. And then the Texas game really, well, really the last couple games actually, started to come on strong and really put the cherry on top with the performance against Texas here at Bill Snyder Family Stadium last fall. And it's carried in to spring practices. Not only that, but I believe, if I can remember correctly, I believe Skylar Thompson said that Malik Knowles is taking charge in the wide receiver room. This is a very... Unline that statement where I just said right there. Malik knows all the struggles. We hammer him on this podcast for very good reason. I mean, all the talent that it, on the back end that Malik knows. He has that big play potential. I mean, we did not see it until towards the end of the year. It seems to be a theme tonight on the podcast. K-State men's basketball starting to come around a little bit, and Malik knows, is this the year that he can finally break out? Obviously, you have your QB1 back, and now Malik Knowles starting to finally be the guy, be that leader that this K-State offense desperately needs.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Eddie. And, you know, there's a lot of nuggets that can be taken about spring ball, and we can, you know, get into a handful of them. Here, because I think there's a lot of good things. I mentioned to you, I said a couple weeks ago on the podcast when it was the opening of spring ball. It was the first day, actually, when we recorded, and I said, we're not going to be able to get, you know, to see these players the way that we would see them in the regular season, or we could see them in a spring game, when we might have more access to what they were doing on the football field. Although I will say that the K-State's social media team has done a pretty good job at giving us some good spring content on Twitter and Facebook. There's no doubt about that. But still, you don't get the spring game to see them in a live game action. And so, you know, you're still kind of limited on the analysis that we can do. We kind of have to rely on what we hear. What we hear from the coaches and what we hear from the reporters around the team. And so, you know, one of the things that we've heard has been about Malik Knowles, and you mentioned it. Skylar said in the press conference that he has really taken charge in the wide receiver room. And as a K-State fan, that obviously has to be something that is encouraging to you, because when the season ended, you were sitting here thinking, is Malik going to transfer out? There was a lot. I don't know if you remember, Eddie, but was it Gopin Hauerkamp who leaked that he was transferring out, like back when they went to Iowa State and they got killed and he didn't travel with the team, or I can't remember if it was Go Power Cat or just another group, but somebody leaked that he was actually transferring out. And so when you look how far things have gone from one outlet literally reporting that he was transferring out to now where he's taking charge in the wide receiver room, that's exactly what you want to hear. And there were a couple other nuggets about Malik that I found really interesting. Courtney Messingham was talking about Malik. He said that Malik hasn't missed a single rep this spring due to an injury, and that he's also, he also kind of, you know, talked about Skylar as well. You know, hasn't missed a rep. He's taking charge of the room. And then Malik, I believe Malik actually spoke as well, and he said that he was going through some, let me see if I can pull up exactly what he said. Here it is. Yeah, so Malik Knowles, he said that late last season he became refocused after dealing with some things off of the field, and that he's locked in and with a new level of focus right now, taking the steps to make his body more durable as well. So it sounds like he's more locked in mentally, he's more locked in physically, and he's taking it all to the next level. As a K-State fan, that's obviously what you want to hear from a guy that's as talented as Malik Knowles, because we know that he's got the gifts. He's got that raw, you know, ability to be a really good receiver for K-State. And with Skylar Thompson coming back for his sixth year now, you're going to have somebody who can get him the ball. And it's not going to be a young guy that might be a little inconsistent getting Malik the ball. It's going to be a guy who knows Malik, He knows where Malik likes it. He knows where Malik's going to run. He understands the offense. And, you know, I think that'll help Malik. I think that'll help him take his game to the next level. So, if you're a K-State fan, you know, you've got to, you know, be really encouraged about what you're hearing about Malik. And then, you know, just staying in the wide receiver room, Corey Messingham validated everything that we'd heard about Keenan Garber and, you know, the steps that he's taking as a receiver. You know, we talked about the fact that, you know, Keenan Garber has, you know, been impressing, that he's really maturing as a blocker, he's maturing as a route runner, and that he is really becoming a better, you know, well-rounded receiver. And so to hear that, that's encouraging, and it makes you begin to wonder, could that be your 1-2 duo at receiver? Malik, you know, Malik Bowles and Keenan Garber, has Garber taken that much of a step? Based on everything that we've heard, those are the two guys that we've heard more buzz around than anybody.
Yep.
You know, now we know that Sebastian Taylor, he's not practicing in the spring, so he may be in that, I'm correct in that, Eddie, right? He's not practicing.
I said that a couple weeks ago on the podcast. He ain't practicing.
Yeah, as I thought. So he's not practicing, so he'll be in the mix too, obviously. If he can get healthy, he'll be in the mix too, but you know, it's good. It's good to hear that there's some guys that are coming out. We'll talk about tight end here a little bit later. But the one other one I wanted to throw out that had been pretty evident to me, Eddie, is we've talked a lot about the quarterback play. We know that Skylar's going to be the guy. But there's been a lot of talk about, you know, who's QB2. And I've heard a ton of good things about Will Howard and how he's gotten stronger. And he's gotten faster, and how he's more confident, and he's really taken a step. And on the flip side, with Jake Rubley, and I don't mean to jump the gun here, Eddie, but just quickly with Jake Rubley, you know, Corey Messingham is talking about, yeah, you know, the game's hitting him pretty fast right now.
He's not ready.
He's not ready. So I think Will Howard's going to be your backup. I think that I would be surprised if he was not the backup to Skylar again this year, just based on what I've heard. But the only reason I bring that up is because we were talking about receivers, which obviously affects quarterback, and that was a conversation that we had in the past. There's probably one too many quarterbacks there. Who's the guy that's going to end up going? Well, I don't think it's going to be Will Howard, based on what we've heard. I don't think Jake Rubley is going to be going anywhere, because I'm getting the hunch that he may redshirt. So, you know, we'll see what happens there, but it does sound like Will Howard's probably the guy behind Skylar. So I just wanted to get that in there. But just to tie it back to Malik, you know, either way, you know, Skylar, you know, even if Will has to plug in there for a game or two, you know, I think Malik, based on what we've heard, you know, has the ability to step up and be that guy. But we need to see it. You know, we thought this going into last year, and we got kind of blindsided when his game dropped. So, you know, as great as it all sounds, you know, I'd like to see Malik come out and just have one of those games where he just goes off. You know, if he comes out against Stanford and he goes for 100-plus and a touchdown, okay, you know, let's go. But, I need to see him. You know, I need to see him do it. You know, before I'm going to get fully invested, because we've invested in that before. We put our eggs in the Knowles basket and had the eggs stolen. So, you know, let's use an Easter reference that's usually around the corner. Let's see in the fall if he can go out and do it. But there's no doubt that it's encouraging to hear, you know, the steps that he's taken and him getting him in a better mental place and him in a better physical place, because I think it was important for him to get more durable, because he has injuries all the time, so he needs to get more durable. And it is important for him. You can tell that he was in his head. And so for him to be able to get into a better mental place, I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, and staying on the quarterback side of things, Will Howard, yeah. I did come across that, absolutely. Jake Rubley, obviously, four-star recruit. In here, and yeah, definitely typical freshman stuff there. Game moving a little bit too fast for him right now, and yeah, so Will Howard, and also kind of staying on him for a second here. found that's kind of interesting that Courtney Messingham has said something about using him in short yard situations instead of getting Skyler beat up. So that felt that was kind of an eye catcher as well, given the fact that Skyler is coming off of a season-ending injury last year.
Yep.
And we saw how Will Howard can run. He can run. So that's a good thing that he's getting quick, more stronger and faster. So that I would like to see that a little bit more this year. if they can fit it into the game plan, yeah, using him in short yard situations instead of using their main guy. I mean, we see it all the time now. Where teams will use two quarterbacks and use the other one in short yard situations. That's the way that we're seeing it now in college. And kind of, I just realized this, saying Daniel Ema or Bebe's name, and I literally just realized this, that the name just. It just came to me that this guy played for USC. I recognize the name from last year. He played with USC.
He did play with USC.
And not only that, he started with Florida, which I did not know about.
Yep.
So doing just a little bit of research on him, I knew the name was familiar. So yeah, this is a guy that caught a lot of passes with USC. This is another weapon. In the repertoire for Skylar Thompson to have. I mean, you already have Deuce. We already know what Deuce Vaughn can do, and he's been impressed so far. So we know what he can do there. You're getting Malik Knowles stepping up to the forefront, and now you're getting this guy, 240, 245 weapon from you, a transfer. And I failed to mention that as well, a transfer. So this is a big get for Chris Klieman. We talked about the offense last year hammered them. After the loss, critical loss of Skyler, and now you're getting a couple of more weapons. I mean, you lost, the tight end last year, more last year. So I had a blank for a second there. It's my bad. But now you replace him with this guy. I mean, this guy caught a lot of passes last year. So things are on the up and up for this offense and kind of to go. I mean, I'll get your comments here on that in a second. But also, speaking of quarterbacks, a guy that we have not mentioned, and we mentioned him sparingly on Triple P, Jaren Lewis.
Yes.
his name's been coming up here a little bit in the spring balls so far. And QB1 saying that Jaren Lewis has the best arm talent of any quarterback of the roster. Ooh,
he did say that, but I feel like Jaren Lewis would be the one that would end up transferring out. I could be wrong, but I don't see any way it will happen. Saw that. I'm just like, I feel like someone is going to transfer out. I don't feel like it's going to be Will Howard or Jake Rubley, though. It really just leaves him, but when that Skyler, drops, he's got the best arm talent. And then you're like, I don't know. Maybe they all do hang around. I mean, but you're right. That was interesting. That was an interesting nugget from Skyler.
We talked about it already. I'm going to still stick with that. but you're right on that side. They all could stay, but in this modern day of college football now, if you don't get your way, you're going to hit the transfer portal. That's just the way it is. So, I mean, Jaren Lewis, Will Howard, I'm going to stick with my intuitions on those two, even though Will Howard has, improved so far in the spring. It has gotten a little bigger, a little faster, like you said. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, one of those could transfer, or hey, who knows? Maybe a change up in the plans. Maybe Jake Rubley. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that. So
I wouldn't like that, Eddie.
I just throwing his name in there. I don't know.
That's
so it's
true.
Just
yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, that wouldn't sit well with K-State fans much at all. Anyways, so this is Skyler's last year, and this QB discussion, you can throw any one of these guys. Now, I obviously still haven't seen Jaren Lewis, even though I've been to a lot of K-State games last year. Still haven't seen him on the field. I haven't gotten enough gauge on him yet, so I don't, until I can actually see him on person, obviously, I don't know. I can only go off of what what Skylar said already, so I mean, this is going to be an interesting battle for that backup spot, at least throughout the spring, summer, and definitely into the fall here. It's just going to be something that we're going to follow throughout, right up until the first week of state against Stanford and Arlington.
Yeah. I was thinking quickly about the quarterback thing too. It could be a situation too, Eddie, where they all hang around, knowing, well, Skyler's going to be the guy this year. Let's hang around because it's a young group. Let's hang around for a year and let's see what way the coaches go post Skyler, and then when the quarterback maybe doesn't get their way after Skyler, that maybe that's when you see a guy leave. I don't know. Well, you're right. We'll just have to keep eyes on it. Having four guys of that caliber at the quarterback position usually doesn't lead to all of them stay. So it'll be interesting. But it's a good problem to have. I mentioned this last summer on the podcast, Eddie, that you're never going to have too many good skill players. And obviously, it starts quarterback. So it's a good problem for K-State to have. But getting back quickly to what you were talking about with Will Howard short yardage situations, you know, I think that's a great idea to have him have a package for him, and that's different than having a two QB system like Jake Waters and Daniel Sams, or a two QB system where, you know, guys are alternating drives or things like that. I hate two QB systems when it's, you know, we can't decide who our starter is, so we're just going to...
Right, yeah.
We're just going to play both guys. I've never seen it work. I've never seen that work before. I'm not a fan of it. I think, honestly, I know that competition breeds success, and I do believe that, but in that situation, it just seems like it doesn't work. Like, we saw Jake Waters flourish once, Daniel Sams is out of the picture. I feel like that's how it happens a lot of times in those quarterback situations. With that said, I do think competition is good for quarterbacks. I just don't know if in that particular scenario. But I think that having Will Howard in, you know, Skyler's the guy, and you know he's the guy, but you have Will Howard in to, you know, a package for him where he can, you know, run the ball in short yard situations. You know, maybe there's times you line up at QB and you have Skyler out at receiver, or vice versa. You have him lined up at receiver. You know, just get a little creative with him because he's big. He's apparently faster, stronger, you know, really moving well, and, you know, just get creative with him. I know you're going to hate this analogy, and I'm not comparing him to him, but, you know, Taysom Hill does a little bit of everything for the Saints.
You went there.
I knew you'd hate that. And he is not Taysom Hill. I'm not saying that he can do all things Taysom
Hill. Hell no.
Not saying that at all. Taysom Hill can do a ton of things. But you could put a package together with certain things for Will Howard to utilize his skills and to protect Skyler. I think that you touched on it on the other side. And maybe it would be more like Blake Bell. When Blake Bell would come in at Oklahoma in the short yardage package, it could be even more like that. That might be more realistic example. Back when Blake Bell was at Oklahoma in 20.
Oh, gosh.
I think it was.
That's a blast from the past.
Yeah, that is a blast from the past. But, you know, the bulldozer, and the bulldozer is from Wichita. he had this bulldozer package. He'd come in at quarterback when, I think it was Landry Jones, would go out. But it would protect Skyler, and you don't want Skyler to be taking unnecessary hits. Skyler's going to run the ball. We know he's going to run the ball. That's a big part of his game. That's part of what K-State missed this year, to be 100% honest, Eddie, was the way that Skyler could extend plays and could make plays with his feet. You know, we know that Will Howard could do it too, but, you know, he didn't have that same ability that Skyler did in regards to kind of feeling what the defense was doing and being able to find the open spot in the field, being able to take advantage of it. I feel like we saw Will Howard more successful in more quarterback-designed runs. I feel like Skyler can, when the play breaks down, Skyler used to get real happy feet, would be dancing around the pocket and really, you know, would miss a receiver or miss a running lane. But I feel like he's gotten better in that regard. I think he's got a pretty good feel now of the field and where to go with it. But so he's going to run the ball and he's going to take some hits. But if you can take some of those hits away from him in the short yardage game, you can take some hits away from Deuce Vaughn as well in the short yardage game. And you can, you know, get it to Will Howard and let him take some of those hits. That's fine by me. You know, he's big enough to run guys over. And if I would assume K-State's offensive line is going to be approved this year. So if they can just, you know, pave a little bit of a hole for him and let him do the rest, then, you know, K-State could have something there. And teams are going to have to respect Deuce Vaughn. You know, you have Deuce Vaughn, you know, next to Will Howard. You know, teams are going to have to commit guys to Deuce Vaughn, and that's just going to make it easier for Will Howard to be able to take advantage of the size and speed that he may have in those short yardage plays. So, you know, I really think that there's a lot of benefit that could come from those packages with K-State, and I think there's a reason for Courtney Messingham to be intrigued by that.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, a couple of Kansas State alums. This is the Purple Project Podcast. And of course, we're also 91.9 Wildcat, 91.9 alums, the radio station, student radio station on campus. Yeah, so it'll be interesting, that's for sure. And I do get the whole Taysom Hill analogy that you
bad
used.
Analogy. That was a bad analogy. I apologize. He's Blake there. Bell was much better than Taysom Hill.
Yes, Blake Bell was a lot better than that. But yeah, so it'll be. I mean, we'll see how that goes if that even transpires. But definitely, that's something that we'll have to when that time comes. We'll see. But that'll be definitely an interesting storyline. One of the interesting storylines to follow this as the spring ball continues for K-State. Of course, we're going to have more when news comes around. We're going to talk about the defensive side of the ball as well. That probably be next week.
I'm sorry, what's up? I didn't mean to cut you off there. I had one last thought that popped in my head that I meant to mention. And totally slipped my head until now. I wanted to quickly touch on the tight end. Daniel Howard, I can say his last name, not even going to try. But when you and I were talking about the show, I feel like he could be a, and you mentioned Bradley Moore, that's the only reason it popped back in my head. I feel like he could be that next big receiving tight end for K-State. And we talked about how K-State landed some big transfers, after the season. And, you know, he was one of the guys that, if I was K-State fans, I'd keep an eye out for him because I think that he could end up being one of those guys that may, you know, be the third down threat. He may lead K-State in receiving for all we know, like Bradley Moore did. So keep an eye for Daniel out there because based on everything I'm hearing and what we've seen to him, you mentioned he's played some big-time football and some big-time conferences. So keep an eye out for him because you're right. He definitely could leave a mark out there for K-State. So just wanted to get that in there, too, and kind of reaffirm what you said about him because there's no doubt that he could be a really important part in what they do, especially if he is as good and as productive as K-State's playing him up to be right now so far in spring ball.
Yeah, so definitely we'll keep an eye on the offense here as spring ball continues. We're just a half hour in to tonight's episode 48. 48 episodes already of Triple P, the podcast here. One of the podcasts, anyways, for K-State. I want to switch gears now back over to basketball pretty much for the rest of the podcast. Obviously, we talked a little about the men here, but I'm going to start over with the women's side of things. I mean, K-State. Jeff Mitty, oh man. So they got past their first round game against TCU, and he almost blew it in the fourth quarter. I talked about it in one of the dailies last week. And then losing to West Virginia, they had this game. They had full wraps of this game. I mean, I talked about it, and I'm going to bring it back up again. I mean, they were up 7 points with over a minute and a half left in this game, and pretty much we talked about it all basketball season long with the Jeff Mitty squad. I mean, four quarters had bitten them in the butt, and it bit them here, and just, I don't know what happened, but all I can say there, but that's just inexcusable. When you have a 7-point lead that late in the game, you have the 17th ranked team in the country on the ropes. You get double digits from four of your five starters in the game. Well, I mean, surely enough, K-State, when you look at the box score, K-State upset the West Virginia, right? Well, wrong on that. West Virginia pulls off a come bit from behind effort there. Just a lack of executing for K-State late in this game. And I'm going to say it again. Like I said it on the daily last week. This one's on the coaches. Inexcusable to blow a 7-point lead that late in the game there. And gotta be scratching your head going into the offseason. You lose only two seniors there. You're bringing pretty much everyone back, you would assume, right? So, Alex, K-State lost to West Virginia. The ladies lost to West Virginia 58-56 in the game after K-State pulled away not once but twice in the second half of the game, and it's all for naught. West Virginia battled back. Now, West Virginia lost the Texas Duke Vigil, which lost to Baylor, who won the Big 12 tournament in the ladies' side, and then Texas, Shaka Smart, coming out with a Big 12 tournament champion there on that front there. So, but back to Jeff Mitty's team there. This has been a theme all season long. I mean, they underperformed. There's no cut corners on this one. They just underperformed here, and then they put the cherry on top of it. You blow a lead. As I said on the daily, they pretty much pulled Atlanta Falcons and blew a lead there that you had a control of. So a lot of questions, Alex, for this ladies team going into the offseason.
You know, a lot of questions is right, Eddie. And now we knew that going into the Big 12 tournament, we knew that the women's team, didn't have we knew the women's and men's team. We knew they both, didn't have a realistic chance of winning the tournament. So we knew that, season would end on a loss with them, most likely. But this is not the way that the K-State women's team would have wanted to end their season. It's not the team that they lost to. Honestly, if they would have lost by 10 points, I think it would have been easier to digest. It was that they blew a 7-point lead with a minute and a half left and found a way to lose that game, and that's how your season ends. And of course it's against a ranked team, because we've talked about this team can compete. They can compete with anybody. They compete with ranked teams. But they just can't finish in the fourth quarter. And against West Virginia, we mentioned it, they were 55-48, minute and a half left. West Virginia goes on a run. They win the game 58-56. In fact, it was so bad that it was 56-56. It looked like K-State was going to get a chance with the last shot.
Yep. Worst
case scenario, the game was going to go to overtime. Yep. And the ball gets thrown away or stolen, and West Virginia is able to get numbers. They had 2-on-1 or 3-on-2.
Pretty much a layup. 2-on-2-on-1 layup.
Was it 2-on-1? Yeah, it was 2-on-1. And they drove down. They got a layup as time expired.
And you're on SportsCenter.
Yes, and then you end up on SportsCenter, which is exactly what you want, right? That's exactly what you want on SportsCenter. It was just painful game, Eddie. It was, this was a game that K-State was leading from early second quarter pretty much all the way on. And, West Virginia was out for the first quarter and a half, but K-State had the lead pretty much from mid-second quarter on. And in the fourth quarter, K-State actually, and I'm telling you, I had the box score, it just popped away from me. So I don't have it in front of me anymore. Yes, I do. didn't let you. West Virginia did outscore K-State. There we go. So West Virginia did end up outscoring K-State 18-15 in the fourth quarter. You know, K-State ends up, you know, losing. K-State held West Virginia to 5 points in the second quarter. And that is amazing. You can hold a team like West Virginia, who's 20-5, 13-5. They ended up going to the Big 12 championship. You hold them to 35% from the field, 5 points in a quarter, you know, and you still can't find a way to get the game. It's a tough pill to swallow. And you're right, Eddie. Inexcusable. There's no other way to describe it. So it's completely inexcusable. I saw a couple of the women's players tweeting after the game, complaining about foul calls and, you know, look at this, look at that. You know what? I get it. They're right. There were bad calls in the game. They were getting fouled and they weren't called. But you know, that's not an excuse.
Do not. That's like football. Do not let the refs decide the game.
No, you don't. You don't ever let the refs decide the game. And I get it. Look, I complain about refs all the time when I'm watching the game. Man, you should hear me when I watch some of the K-State men's games, watch the Portland game, or watch it really any sporting game for that matter. But you know, you can't complain about the refs. But you're right. When you blow a 7-point lead with a minute and a half left, that's not all refs. I mean, that is, you know, you making mistakes. You've got to make mistakes in the last 90 seconds of a ball game to blow a 7-point lead in college athletics. It's a little different than NBA. You got a shorter shot clock. The talent level is at a different level. So it's a little easier for a team to be able to make a run. But in college, where you've got the, it's just, especially when it gets a team that's shooting 35% from the field, and then you allow them to score, you know, go on that run. You know, that's just, you have to make mistakes. So I don't want to hear, I don't mean it in a rude way, but I just, that doesn't make me feel better as K-State fantasy man. They're complaining about foul calls when you just blew a 7-point lead with a minute and a half left in a season where you've been blowing games and blowing fourth quarters all season long. All game, every game, all season. It's been the trend. We've talked about it since December for practically on here. And it just rubs in the wrong way, Eddie. It rubs in the wrong way to see them complaining about fouls. You know, don't blow a 7-point lead with a minute and a half left. Don't blow fourth quarter leads. You know, it's not happening every game. So, you know, that just rubbed me the wrong way. Had to get that out. But, moral of the story, they do. I've said in the last couple podcasts, they're going to have to look in the mirror. And they're going to have to, this team, coaches, players, you know, managers, and everyone. And you know, they need to own their part. You know, own their part in this. You know, that they took part in what went wrong this season and figure out what they need to do to correct it. Because the only way that you're going to come back next year and be a better basketball team, you know, you've got to be accountable for, you know, your part in what went wrong. And you need to find a way to fix it this offseason. It's that simple. And I think that's really where it starts for them, you know. You know, take accountability of your mistakes. You know, and figure out what you need to do to fix them, and get in the gym or get in the film, whatever it might be, and learn from it and get better from it, and then come back and you know, have a better season next year. So that's just, you mentioned it, Eddie. Yeah, they got most of the players coming back, and it's a good group of players. So yeah, they were
good group. Yeah, very good.
They were picked to finish fourth in the Big 12 for a reason. This is a talented group. You know, they can win some games. They've been good under Jeff Pittman for most of this season, which makes this such an odd season. But I don't think that you can blame it strictly on COVID. There's no doubt that COVID had a big effect, but you can't blame it strictly on COVID. I mean, some things clearly didn't go as planned and broke down. They underperformed. There's no denying it. They weren't picked to finish 10th like the men's team was. And then the men's team actually finished 9th. The men's team finished better than they were projected.
Yeah, who knew?
This isn't like the men's team. You know, this is a completely different situation. I've mentioned that before. This is a situation where they clearly underperformed, and they've got to figure out what they need to do to get back to the level that they should be playing at. And it puts, it warms Jeff Biddy's seat up. There's no doubt that it warms his seat up. I still like Jeff Biddy. I still think he's a good coach. But if he comes out next year and they underperform again,
that seat's going to get real hot.
Yeah, that seat's going to get real hot. That seat's going to get real hot because this group's too talented. And I keep looking back to things I said, but you get a player like Aoka Lee, and you can't take advantage of her talent, and it ends up kind of just going down the drain. That just makes it hurt that much more. I mean, you just feel like, oh man, we got like a once in a decade type player, like a one in every 10 years type of player, and we weren't able to take advantage of it. We weren't able to take advantage of having that here at K-State, not at Baylor. They weren't at Baylor. They weren't at UConn. They were at K-State, and we couldn't take advantage of it. That would make it even more painful. So they got to figure it out, and we'll see if they can do it.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
K-State women in the season 9-18 overall record. Ouch. And even a triple ouch on the Triple P podcast. K-State ladies 3-15 in conference play. And Alex mentioned it already. Did not finish very well. Pretty much bottom half of the league there. And yeah, there's going to be some questions answered. And this is a hard pill to swallow for Jeff Minnie's team. And going into the offseason after a game that you had in hand and then let it slip away. So again, on the Triple P podcast, we will find out here in the offseason what they do. Obviously, this is obviously Alex hit the nail on the head. A very good group of girls here. So long offseason for them, and hopefully they can get back on the right track and get themselves right for next fall. And kind of flipping back to the men's side, we talked a little bit about them. Just kind of to put the bow, tie the bow on their season, obviously. I mean, moral victory here. Obviously, you lose the game, but the way K-State played, really, an entire tournament was very, very impressive. Obviously, this is where you want to be. You want to have momentum going in the offseason. I've already talked about that. Alex already talked about it also as well. That's a big statement right there for this team. I mean, it came a long ways to finally gel, and they did at the right time. You play your best basketball at the right time, and K-State definitely did that as well. Nigel Pack was awesome in this tournament. Scored 18 points against Baylor last week. He and Davion Bradford. I go back to what I said before the Big 12 tournament in one of the previous episodes of the Purple Project podcast, that this dude has a size. This dude should be dominating every game, night in, night out. The size, he's got this talent, and he made me look good. He made me look good in that first half. Yes, they came a long way, but oh man, next year, obviously, if these guys, this core can come back, which we pray that they do, and they should come back. They're gelling. They're gelling. But Davion Bradford absolutely killed Baylor in the first half of the game. Now, obviously, Baylor made adjustments in the second half of the game, but Bradford also ended up with 18 points in the game. Deshaun Gordon, 15 points for him as well. Deshaun Gordon could be the leading guy from the sophomore class due to Antonio Gordon transferring out. Obviously, I'm going to have Alex have his thoughts on that. Or I gave my thoughts earlier. That came yesterday. Made me the unknown of Montavis Murphy. That's been hammered on this podcast as well. But just those guys. McGurl, yes, he had only 3 points, but he was very effective. 7 assists, 2 steals, 3 rebounds. Only turned the ball over 5 times. So, you know, yeah, they still had a share of turnovers, but not the K-State that we saw early in the year. So this team came to play in Kansas City. That was good to know right there. So, I mean, Baylor, obviously, one of the heavy favorites to make it to the Final Four. We had veterans like Jared Butler, Davion Mitchell, and Teague. Teague, 24 points. Mitchell, 23. Butler, 18 points for him. To take this team to the limit, very impressive for this team. And it just makes you wonder now, again, we kind of go back. We keep saying this on the podcast. You keep these guys, and I hope they all do come back, because they're getting their feet under them now. They know the college game. You have a full year officially underneath your belt now, and you got some momentum going in the off season, and you have that continuity with each other. And with McGurl, possibly, I hear the rumors that he is coming back.
Yeah.
So you have him coming back, obviously, and you have one of the talented guys, Logan, can't remember his last name off the top of my head, one of the guys that committed to K-State will be on this team next year. So the sky's starting to look up for K-State men's basketball, Alex, after this great performance last week.
Well, definitely, and one quick note too before it slips my mind, there was a transfer. I can't remember his name. It was a grad transfer that K-State has at least shown interest in, and it's pretty much exactly the type of grad transfer that K-State would be looking for. And I can't remember all of the details, and I'm not even going to go trying to dig the tweet up right now, because people don't have time to sit here while I'm digging around Twitter trying to find it. But there's a grad transfer. He averaged over 20 points a game last year. He shot over 40% from three, and exactly what K-State will be looking for. K-State needs to get older, and they need to get a shooter. Those are two things that they desperately need. So you would get a guy with experience, and you get a guy that knows how to score the basketball and make three-pointers. So those are literally the two gaping holes that K-State needs to address. And he would meet both of those needs. So who knows if anything comes of it, but K-State has shown interest. Looks like multiple schools have as well. And so something to keep your eye on. Because if K-State could land a transfer or a grad transfer that has that ability, that's exactly what they need. I think that would be the big missing puzzle piece going into next year. Because if they didn't land a guy like that, I still think that they would be pretty young. They still would sure lack some shooting ability, even if McGurl does end up coming back. And so I think that they would take a step, but I think that they could definitely take a bigger step if they could get a veteran in here who has played the game, who shoots basketball, and can lead those guys and help them in their development. So there's no doubt that would be important. But you know, part of it just depends on how many players stay and how many go and how many scholarships you have available and all those things too. So that's another thing that we'll just have to continue to watch as time progresses. But when you look at this particular team, just quickly with Daniel Bradford, you mentioned it, he's got all the tools needed to be an elite big man. And Fran Fraschilla on the broadcast this week said that he believes that Daniel Bradford is ahead of schedule from where David McCormick was at his time at KU, who is now their big man. And so he believes that Davion Bradford could be a better version of David McCormick. And that's obviously encouraging to hear, because David McCormick was an All-American. And granted, he hasn't lived up to that expectation at KU, but he's still a really good big man in the Big 12. So, you know, if he could end up a better version of David McCormick, I think we would all take that here at K-State. But he's big. He's physical, and he's also really finesse in a way, because he knows he's got a good feel. You know, you see a lot of these big men, especially freshmen, that come in and they're big, and, you know, they're able to do this, but they don't have a lot of feel around the basket. They don't have a lot of finesse, and, you know, you'll see him miss a lot of close shots. You'll see him, be too aggressive. You'll see them, it's really unpolished. Those look unpolished. Around the basket a lot of times, and you never got that from him. He has a really good feel of what's going on, where guys are. He's got really good touch around the rim. He's really big and physical, but he's also got that really soft touch, really accurate down low, and it's a really good combination. And, you know, you combine all of that. The biggest thing with Dave Number Adford is foul trouble. He got in foul trouble too much this year. If he can learn how to consistently stay out of foul trouble, the dude's going to be a problem for the next 3 years in the Big 12. That's just the truth. That's just the truth of the matter. And, same thing with Nigel Pack. Nigel Pack, and I see, a player who has potential star factor. He saw it at the Sprint Center. Not the Sprint Center, the T-Mobile Center, whatever. Stop T-Mobile Center, he has that ability too. And we mentioned Dejuan, you mentioned him. I still think that there's a high ceiling for him. I still think that he's K-State's best slasher to the basket. I still think that he's brings as much energy to the court as anybody when he's out there. Makes a lot of hustle plays. He's real physical, he's got good quickness, and if he can just learn to be more accurate shooting the basketball, I think that he can be a really, really good player. And he said that. He said, what do you need to improve on? And he said, I need to shoot better. He said it plain and simple. After the Baylor game, I need to shoot better. And so I would assume that he's going to be working on a shot a lot this offseason. And he said, we, too. He said, I need to shoot better, we need to shoot better. And so I would assume a lot of them will be working on their shots, and you know what, Eddie? They'll be able to practice together for an offseason. They'll be able to get together. They'll be able to practice. They'll be able to finally get those reps that they were not able to get last offseason. And I just don't think you can put enough value on being able to do that. So that's a big deal for them. And, just to loop it out with Mike and Girl, if he doesn't come back, that's big for K-State, because it means what I talked about earlier. It means scoring and veteran leadership. Those are two things K-State desperately needs next year. Mike McGurl was probably their best scorer this year, and he would be a fifth-year senior, because his plan was initially to redshirt his freshman year, but K-State couldn't redshirt him because they had so many injuries. I don't know if you remember, but was it Kamau Stokes and Dean Wade both got hurt for good chunks of that season, or I can't remember exactly all the details of it, but it was because of injuries, he couldn't redshirt. He ended up helping K-State make the Elite Eight, and he could in return end up getting a fifth season on the backside instead of the front side. But it would be big to have that back. So we'll just have to see how it progresses. But there's no doubt there's a lot of promise there.
Yeah, indeed. Yep, indeed. So. Whew, yep, so men's season comes to a close here. Let me pull that back up. Okay, yeah, they finish 9-20 on the year. K-State men's basketball team, Bruce Weber, he said himself, is returning next year. After all speculation, Bruce himself says he's coming back. So you heard it from the man, folks. So interesting to see. Now, hopefully, all that we've talked about this year, is this team going to turn the corner, and what is Bruce doing wrong and whatnot? So, but hey, I mean, in the year on the bright side of things there. So definitely see what happens next fall for the men's basketball team, and they finished 4-14 in conference play. As I mentioned a few moments ago, Texas Longhorns on the men's side won the Big 12 tournament. Who would have thought about that? I mean, obviously, everybody saw Baylor win the tournament, but it was Texas getting the job done there. over red hot Oklahoma State team heading in to March Madness, which leads into a perfect transition into the Big 12 teams in the tournament. We're going to cap off this episode tonight by just talking about the Big 12 teams in the NCAA tournament, which is going to start this weekend with the first and second round games, obviously. And boy, got some interesting matchups here for these Big 12 teams, obviously, going in here. And since I got this side of the bracket pulled off, I'm just going to start there. Obviously, with the west of the bracket, side of the bracket, Alex here, Gonzaga undefeated. And it is the number one overall seed in the tournament there. In the first Big 12 team that I see on here, Oklahoma, 8th seed. And they're going to get Missouri. Interesting to start now. I've seen a lot of highlights on Missouri. I have not seen like actual game, but Missouri, they have improved a lot from a couple years, from last year, especially from them. So interesting matchup for Oklahoma, obviously. Oklahoma's ranked high, which this year, well, they're in the top 10 for numerous spots of the year, which I didn't agree with. In my opinion, but you know, Oklahoma, 8th seed in the West here, and we took it on Missouri in the first round there. And obviously Gonzaga, let me see here right now, I can't do that. So Gonzaga waiting on their first four opponent as I speak, along with USC as well. We scatter down here to the down the other half of the bracket in the west side, KU, third. And there's a lot of eyes on this team for another reason, because of COVID. Three players that we don't know about, Bill Self words, saying that they're not going to travel with the team. So, and Duke not making it into the big dance for the first time in a long time for them due to the COVID as well. So, this is going to be a continue storyline heading into the tournament. Can you keep all the players intact? There's three less players down, and can you obviously they're playing a 14th seed Eastern Washington, which obviously I haven't seen much of there. That's going to be interesting there, and kind of just to round out the rest of this other half of the bracket here, Alex. Here, Iowa, the second seed on that side of the tournament, taking on Grand Canyon. 15 seed Oregon taking on VCU. That's a 7-10 matchup there on that front. So back to KU, and then you touch on Oklahoma if you have any thoughts on there. Kansas, a lot of issues off the court, and particularly with and they're going through some growing pains. We kind of talked about it a little bit last week before recording the podcast. They're just going through a whole lot of crap right now. And now you're throwing more COVID into the mix here. A lot of question marks on them.
Yeah, there's a lot going on Lawrence, Kansas at the moment. And I think I told you last week, Teddy, I said, does it make me awful that I'm just sitting back and enjoying what's happening in Lawrence, pouring myself a mixed drink and just watching it all unfold before my eyes? but getting back to the actual basketball, aspect of it. You're right. There's questions about KU and COVID. We saw Baylor and the effects that it had on Baylor missing some games because of COVID. And you've got to wonder what type of effect does that have on KU? Are they going to come out sluggish? Just to refresh people's minds, Baylor about came out and lost at home to Iowa State their first game back from COVID. Granted, they had missed like 3 weeks or so, but it takes a toll mentally, physically on these players. A lot of times they can't practice, when they have COVID, so they're taking the court, and that's the first time they're even have been on a court since before they were sick. And so there's a lot of unknowns. You just don't know. You just don't know. So I think that's it's interesting kind of an interesting dynamic to keep an eye out on with KU. I will say this. I do think that KU still is going to go on a run. I had them going further than I initially thought. When coming into the tournament, I thought that I would have KU winning a game and probably losing in the second round. They really surged late. You know, they surged late. They beat Baylor. They went on a run. They ended up finishing second in the Big 12, believe it or not, when all was said and done. And their season didn't end because they lost. Their season ended because of COVID. So, you know, they were playing good basketball. They had a blip where they almost lost to, was it UTEP, I think it was. It was in there in that last game when they scheduled one round for the Big 12 tournament. I think it was UTEP. I can't remember exactly who it was, but they almost lost a game. They should have easily won, but they didn't get the win still. And so there's questions with them. But point being is they worked their way up, and they worked their seed line up. I initially thought that they'd be close to a 5 or a 6. They ended up as a 3 because they got so hot late. And, you know, I think that I have them actually going to Sweet 16 and losing to an Iowa team that I think is really, really good with Luka Garza. I really don't think KU would have much of a shot against Iowa, but I do think they're going to go to the Sweet 16, and part of the reason is because I feel like a Wichita State-KU matchup is on the way. I feel like we've got the Kansas matchup, Eddie. It's prepped. It's ready to go. You're going to see Wichita State beat Drake. You're going to blame them. You're going to see them beat USC. And you're going to see KU and Wichita State. Winner goes to the Sweet 16. Mark it, Eddie. Mark it down.
Okay.
Yeah, mark it down. I don't have as much excitement around my Oklahoma, because I watched a lot of Oklahoma and I watched a lot of Missouri. I've seen two both of them a decent amount this year. I think Oklahoma's going to win that game. I do think Oklahoma's a better basketball team. I think they're better than an 8 seed. I think Missouri was really scuffling late. But Oklahoma doesn't have a shot in hell against Gonzaga. I mean, I'll just be real. So
yeah, no chance. No chance there.
Them nor Missouri, neither one does. So
neither one does.
It's a 1-8 upset right there, in my opinion. So I do think Oklahoma gets the win over Missouri, but I don't think it matters because they'll, you know, lose to Gonzaga. I shouldn't say it won't matter because it's always a cool deal when your team wins a NCAA tournament game. But I don't think they would have a shot against Gonzaga. But yeah, I have them playing Oklahoma going out in the second round to Gonzaga and KU going out in the Sweet 16 to Iowa after they beat Wichita State in the Sunflower Showdown, but the other Sunflower Showdown.
And speaking of Wichita State, they're going to be in the first 4 games, which actually is going to begin tomorrow. So, yeah.
If you're listening, those games probably will have happened if this goes out on Friday.
Yep, this is going to go out on Friday, so those will have happened when this podcast comes out.
I might look really stupid.
You might be looking stupid. You might not look like a genius there. But, of course, Wichita State is going to be playing for those of you. Well, this is going to be out Friday, but I'm going to just say it anyway. Wichita State will be playing Drake, Norfolk State, against Appalachian State. That's a couple of 16s there. One of those will be playing. Coming out of that, Wichita State against Drake. That's the 11 matchup there. Who's going to be representing that seed? Mount St. Mary's, 16 seed against Texas Southern. That's a battle of 16 seeds there. And then this one right here. Circle this one, folks. Michigan State, UCLA. That's two B-buds right there. One of them will not go to the tournament. So that's a lot right there. Wichita State will be battling Drake, and then Michigan State, UCLA. That should be a dandy, Alex.
That's going to be a dandy of a first four. I don't think you're ever going to get a better first four game than that.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So, well, a lot to look forward to there. Obviously, this podcast will come out Friday, so we'll know which four will be playing in the tournament. Now, continuing on with the Big 12, searching for the Big 12 teams here, obviously found two of them. We're searched to the east side of the bracket here, and that's where we find Texas, Alex, on this side. and they're going to be playing another Texas team in Abilene Christian, team that I've heard about. 14 seed represent there. So Texas, a 3 seed, are obviously, I mentioned it in the podcast tonight, the Big 12 tourney champs, taking on the 14 seed Abilene Christian, which makes for an interesting matchup there. Michigan is the number one seed in the east side. So Texas, Alex, this is going to make for an interesting matchup with them. Abilene Christian, another team from Texas they have to deal with.
That's right. I actually know a little bit about Abilene Christian because when I was working at the News Channel 6, KUZ-TV, in Wichita Falls, Texas, that's the home of Midwestern State University, and they, I'm trying to think, I don't think they ever actually played Abilene Christian, but they might have played Abilene Christian in some sports, but point being, either way, there was some, there was some overlap to where, you know, covering Midwestern State from time to time would overlap with some things going on at Abilene Christian, and so, kind of had a feel of what was going on at their football and basketball programs when I was there. You know, they've got good programs. They got a good team there, but not enough for the team down in Austin. this Texas team's surging. Eddie, you mentioned they won the Big 12. They look good doing it too, and they're playing really good basketball. They did have to play one last game because of the KU situation, but they still ended the season playing well.
Probably to beat KU anyway, though.
They looked real good in the Big 12 tournament. They beat an Oklahoma State team that has been on fire. They beat them, and I'm really high on Texas. They've got a lot of veteran leadership. They've got a lot of size. They can shoot the basketball. There's really a lot to like about Texas, and so I've got them making a run. I think they're going to beat Abilene Christian. I actually think that the winner of the Michigan State UCLA game, which I'm not exactly sure who will win that game, I think I'm going to go Michigan State, but I'm not sure. But either way, I think the winner of that game beats BYU, and you get a Texas matchup with one of those blue bloods. And I think Texas beats both of them, whoever it is. Then they would square off in my bracket against Alabama in the Sweet 16, who is a really good team. I've seen a decent little chunk of them, too. They can shoot the ball really well. But I feel like Texas is better. I just feel like Texas is a better basketball team than Alabama. So I got Texas going to the Elite Eight, facing Michigan, with a chance to go to the Final Four. But I couldn't pull the trigger for Texas over Michigan to the Final Four. I know Michigan's been scuffling, but boy, they've looked really good for most of the year. They've looked better than Texas for most of the season. That's really what it came down to for me. And so, while Texas is playing really well right now, I just think that might be a little bit of a stretch. I can see Texas making the Final Four run, but I couldn't quite pull the trigger on there, but either way, I do think Texas is going to make a nice push.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Alex Aiden, San Diego, Eddie Greer right here in Manhattan, Kansas. This is the Purple Project Podcast, getting the wind down, talking a little March Madness before we sign off tonight on this edition of the podcast. We're briefly discussing the Big 12 teams that are in it. So we continue that discussion with going to the South bracket side, where that's where we're going to find Baylor. Obviously the number one in that side of the bracket. They're going to be taking on Hartford, a 16 seed, there in their game this week, in the first round matchup this weekend as well. And if Baylor can get past them, then it'll be either North Carolina or Wisconsin. So that's going to be interesting who comes out of that one. And then we move down, transfer into the other half of the bracket. And Alex, that's where we find Chris Beard and Texas Tech, a 6 seed. They're going to be taking on Utah State, 6-11 matchup there. The first round matchup there for Chris Beard there. So I feel like any of these Big 12 teams, and we'll touch on Oklahoma State here in a moment. But Texas Tech, any of these teams, Texas, you mentioned them, they can go to the Elite Eight that you have on there. Any of these teams, if you take Baylor aside, obviously, they can make a run. So Texas Tech will begin, and this is a team, Texas Tech, who made a run all the way to the national championship last year or the year before last. Can't remember.
It was the season that K-State and Tech split the title.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Was that the last season that we actually had a tournament? Because we didn't have a tournament last year.
We didn't have a tournament last year. That's a lot. That was the last tournament.
Last tournament.
Yeah, indeed.
Virginia beat them
for the national championship.
Game. That game went to overtime too. I think that was a good game.
That was a terrific national championship game. And so Chris Beard, they're going to be starting off. Obviously, Mac McClung and those guys. Shannon, those guys, they're going to have their hands full with Utah State. And obviously, we know what Baylor brings to the table, obviously, there. And I'm going to go ahead and do the Midwest bracket here. Illinois, the number one seed in this side of the bracket as well. Oh, they're going to have – they have Drexel in their first-round game. And interesting, if Illinois takes care of them, they're going to have to deal with either a red-hot Georgia Tech team or a lot. And this is going to be familiar, K-State fans. Plug your ears, folks. Loyola Chicago, 8 seed. That right there could be interesting right there, folks. Of course, Loyola Chicago broke the hearts of all of us there in our bid to get back to the Final Four a couple years ago with the big... Three, yeah, I'm rubbing it in. I'm sorry. It's my fault. I blame me.
But I don't know what hurts more, Loyola or Butler. They both hurt.
But Oklahoma State, Alex, we find them. And ESPN commentaries said that Oklahoma State had the worst draw of all the Big 12 teams here. They're going to be playing a pretty damn good Liberty team. A 13 seed. Now, if Oklahoma State can get by that, Oklahoma State's playing their best ball right now, obviously, that we touched on early on in the podcast tonight. If they get past them, they're going to have a deal with either Tennessee or Oregon State, a 5-12 matchup there. But, yeah, Oklahoma State. They seemed like they did get the worst of it here. But, hey, man. I mean, right now you got Mike Boynton and those guys. They got a hot hand right now. So, but they get past Liberty, who's played well all year, not only in football but apparently in basketball too. They can set their sights on a run themselves here. But that's an interesting situation for the Cowboys.
It is, because I'll be honest and honest, it kind of reminds me. The K-State, man, we're really going down some ugly K-State.
I know where you're going. I know where you're going with this one.
This kind of reminds me of the K-State UC Irvine.
Oh,
I know. Oh, my gosh.
That hurts. That probably hurts worse.
That might hurt worse, because that team literally won the Big 12, and it's their senior year, and you go out against UC Irvine in a 4-13 matchup. We could really take the Knights of the Heart and, you know, mention another one. Maybe it's reminds me of K-State LaSalle.
Oh, no. I was there calling the game.
Did you call that game?
Yeah, I was there calling. I was color commentary for that game.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was bad. That was really bad.
those were both 4-13 matchups.
4-13 matchup, yep. 4-13 matchup, yep.
Oh my gosh. But yeah,
In
Kansas City. Oh, I know. That made it even worse too. Oh my gosh. At the T-Mobile Center. But man, that's what it reminds me of. I feel like Oklahoma State, they got underseeded, like I felt K-State did as well, both of those seasons. Oklahoma State gets underseeded. And then they got to go against Team Liberty, who is on fire, like LaSalle and UC Irvine were when K-State went into those two matchups. And then if they find a way to get past them again, they're probably going to have to play a Tennessee team that has been playing really good basketball as well. And you know, underseeded, put up against a team that, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, they would give them UCMG, you know, trade them with Florida State or something. I mean, my goodness, that's a tough break for Oklahoma State. I have Oklahoma State beating Liberty. You're right, Eddie. They are on fire right now. I mean, they are scorching hot. And so I do think that they're going to beat Liberty because they're playing really well. I understand that they're a hot upset pick, but I don't get it because Oklahoma State is playing great basketball right now, and they have possibly the best player in the country. So I understand the upset. It reminds me kind of the UC Irvine thing, but it also kind of doesn't just because of the way Oklahoma State's playing and the fact that they've got maybe the best player in the country. So I don't know. It doesn't feel like that's the right team to pick an upset special with. But I do have them beating Liberty. I do have them beating Tennessee, believe it or not, because they're playing really good basketball, Eddie, and I think they get to the Sweet 16. And then they face up against familiar foe Brad Underwood, former head coach of the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Their former coach gets them. He gets them with his new team, Illinois. He makes K-State fans wish they hired Brad Underwood when Frank left. And he moves on to the Elite Eight. So that's what I think happened with them. Just quickly, to get down to West Virginia.
Yeah, I was about to touch on that. I forgot about West Virginia, but go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just quickly dip on. They're playing not as well at the moment as Oklahoma State, but I do think they'll get past Morehead State, who is their matchup. I do have them losing in the second round to San Diego State.
Ooh.
And the biggest reason, two reasons. Number one, I've seen San Diego State. Well, no, number one.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course he did. Of course he did.
No. Number one, West Virginia's not playing well right now. They've lost, well, three of their last five or two of their last four. I can't remember exactly what it is, but they're not playing. They're kind of sputtering right now. That's part of it. The other part of it is I've seen a lot of San Diego State, as you can imagine, out here, and they are good. They can shoot the ball really well. They can defend really well. They only have like three or four losses on the season. They were completely dominant all practically all season long. And that UCLA team that's playing in the play-in game, San Diego State took it to them earlier in the season in the non-con. I mean, that game wasn't even close. If I recall, that game was not even close at all. San Diego State just took them to the woodshed. But it's a really good team. San Diego State always has a good basketball team. That Kawhi Leonard came from San Diego State.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, yeah, they had a player that went in the NBA draft. I forget his name now. This past season, who was really good, too. They were going to be a one seed last year. I don't know if you remember, Eddie, but San Diego State lost one game last year. They were projected to be a one seed. And then COVID happened. But they have a lot of those holdovers still from that team. So that's why they're as good as they are this year, and they won their conference again. But moral of the story, I think West Virginia loses that game. And then just to quickly loop back up, because I know we're getting short on time, but Texas Tech, you know, they're coming off. They're the last team to play in the national championship, them and Virginia. And you mentioned it. I think they're a dangerous team, and they've got players that know how to win. They got a coach that knows how to win. And look, some of them, a handful of them have been there before. So, you know, that Utah State, they played San Diego State in the championship. They beat San Diego State, actually, a couple times this season. So they're a good team, but I think Texas Tech's going to take care of them. They're going to face Arkansas, who looks really good. But, you know, I'm reaching here. I'm reaching with Texas Tech. I'm giving Texas Tech the win over Arkansas because, you know what? I don't know. Maybe that's a little lower in me, Eddie, but I just think that that's a good matchup for Texas Tech. I think that they can find a way to slow Arkansas down offensively and can score it on buckets against Arkansas to make it a game. I feel like it's a pretty good matchup for them. But I do have them lose to Ohio State. You know, I think that the magic kind of flames out there in the Sweet 16 for them, and Ohio State will move on. And then just to finish it out, Baylor. they haven't looked the same since COVID, Eddie. They just haven't looked the same. So I have losing to Hartford in the first round.
Can you say that again?
I do not have that. I do not have Baylor losing to Hartford. That's a joke. I'm surprised I said that with straight face. I do not. I believe Baylor has the COVID thing. And it's an issue. It's a real thing. They haven't looked the same. As great as K-State's performance was against Baylor, Baylor hasn't looked the same since COVID. But a majority of the season, Eddie, I sat there, and I watched Baylor, and I watched Gonzaga. And I watched Baylor, and I watched Gonzaga. And I watched them, and I just felt like Baylor was the best team in college basketball for a majority of the season. And I understand they've had the COVID issues. And I understand that Gonzaga is the hot pick right now. They're the hot thing. Everyone's picking Gonzaga. I get it. Gonzaga's loaded. But I'm going with my gut, Eddie. I'm going with my gut. For a majority of the season, I sat there and said, Baylor looks like the best team in college basketball. And Scott Drew has a history of taking his Baylor teams on deep runs in the tournament. He's never had a team like this. And Mark Few's never won a national championship. Granted, neither is Scott Drew, but you get my point. Mark Few's been in this situation before and not won one.
Right,
so
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I sit there and I say, You know what? It's a little. This is some Big 12 homer in me. I'll be honest. This is some Big 12 homer coming out of me. I'm sure it is because the brain says you probably should take Gonzaga. Maybe Illinois, because Illinois is on fire right now. Gonzaga or Illinois, take a team like that. I mean, Baylor's, people say they're scuffling. They've lost two games all season. They aren't scuffling, but I get it. They don't look the same. But majority of the season, they did look the same. So you know what? The brain may say take Gonzaga, but I'm going with the heart. I'm going with the eyeballs. That's not what I saw most of the year. I got Baylor winning it all, Eddie. I got him gutting down the nets and finishing the job. Cat couldn't finish.
You heard it here first on Pro Positive Podcast. It got on tape.
I'm just saying. That's what I got, Eddie. I'm going to get straight to it. I got to beat Gonzaga. Of course, I got Gonzaga going to the championship because Gonzaga was loaded. And I'll be honest. I'm going to see that matchup. They were supposed to play in the
They're supposed to play at the beginning of the year, somewhere like that.
And the game got canceled. And I just want to see the game. I really just want to see those two teams play. I do think we're going to get to see them play. Illinois is playing great basketball. They could beat Baylor. There's no doubt. But I just feel like we're destined to see a Baylor-Gonzaga matchup, and I'm destined to have my belief that Baylor is better than Gonzaga come true. So we'll see. We'll see. But I'll say this. If Gonzaga wins the national championship, I'll be really happy for them. And Mark Few, he deserves it. They deserve it. They're two great teams. Illinois is playing amazing. If Illinois won it all, I'd feel great for Brad Underwood. I'd be really happy for him. So, and same thing with Howard at Michigan. If they were able to win it all, I'd feel happy for him too. So, a lot of good storylines. It'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, we're definitely coming on a short time because it's past here Central Time. It's 10:35. So. Quickly here, before we wrap this thing up, obviously you did your bracket already. I'm going to do mine tomorrow. So, so the over or under. So, which Big 12 team, how many Big 12 teams make it to the Sweet 16 weekend? Four. I'm going to set the mark at half. So, pretty much four. So, over or under, four. What you got?
Okay, well, I got Kansas going to the Sweet 16,
which is one.
I've got Texas going to the Elite Eight, so that would be two.
That's two.
I got Oklahoma going to the Sweet 16, so that would be three.
That's three.
And I have got Texas Tech going to the Sweet 16, so that would be four. And then Baylor going to the Sweet 16, which would be five. So I've got it at five, so I guess I would go with over on that. We will see if it looks stupid or not. I have a couple stretches. I do have a couple stretches. As you know, Texas Tech's a little bit of a stretch. Oklahoma State's a little bit of a stretch. But I'll go over since I got five in my bracket.
Oh, all right. Yeah, so for me, I'm just going to throw it out here. Man. Yeah, I'm going to have to say, it's going to be tough. I want to say, goodness gracious, you don't know. This is the tournament, man. Indianapolis anything can happen. I am going to play. Goodness gracious. I'm not sold on Oklahoma. I haven't done a bracket yet. Keep that in mind. And West Virginia coming here with no momentum. And they got some hard, I got a couple hard games in there. Texas, you don't know his Texas team. Even though, yes, they've won the big, they're the Big 12 tournament champions. You don't know which team's going to show up. They can be great one game. They can be not so great the next. That could come back to bite you in this type of format here. I'm gonna say even. I'm going to leave it like that. Four.
So, I'll be honest with you, I kind of feel like yours is more accurate. I have a five, but I feel like it's going to be four on the nose. I just have a feeling.
I think it's going to be on the nose.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was feeling when I was going through my bracket too. Because I have a couple stretches, but I don't think I'm going to land all of them. I just don't think I'm going to land all of them. I'll go over because that's what I have in my bracket. But I, at the core of my core, I don't think I'll land every single team I have to 16. So I definitely think that four is probably a pretty I feel better about four than I do five. I don't think there'll be three though. I think they'll get four.
I think they'll get four at least.
I do think they'll get four.
Yeah, I think somebody in here is gonna get upset. I think a couple of teams are going to get upset. I put out Oklahoma already. That 8-9 matchup is always a toss-up game there. So that's one of those games. And the other two, they can come from anywhere. So I'm going to leave it like that. So we'll see what happens in the first. And we'll definitely have recaps of those games on the next edition of the Pro Project Podcast. And keep an eye on spring football as that keeps on chugging along here in the month of March, Alex. So, any last words here before we close it out?
Hey, and the last words for me, just a couple quick things. If I can clear my throat, that is. First off, just want to wish Antonio Gordon all the best. We did see our first transfer go through. We know that he was going through some. As Bruce Harper put it, total health issues. I did hear you mention that the other day. I thought you did a good job on touching on that. Not exactly Thanks. Sure what's going on yeah. with him. Whatever it is, it sounds like it was probably some mental, some physical, a little bit of everything. I didn't get the feel that it was really coaches related or being upset with the coaches. I felt like it was more of something was going on and he probably needed to be closer to home. With whatever was going on. I could be wrong, I could be misreading it, but I don't think that was related to a coaching thing. I don't think that should throw up any red flags for anybody. I don't think that, because we've talked about that a little bit. We've talked about, oh man, this could be a red flag if these guys transfer. I don't get that feel with this particular transfer. I think that it's some personal issues that he's probably going through or something. I could be wrong. I don't want to say what's going on because I don't know. But whatever it is, hopefully, he gets better. And he can, land on his feet somewhere. He definitely improved this year. And, I wish him all the best. I think K-State will be fine without him. I do. But I do wish him all the best and that he can land on his feet. And I think that, he can continue to improve as a player. I think he's got a bright future. And then just the final thing, I just hope everybody enjoys March Madness. It's an amazing time. It was a great week of conference tournament basketball this past week.
Yeah.
It was the best basketball I'd seen all year. We hadn't seen games with this intensity coming down to the wire like this. We haven't had this feeling, that type of feeling, in probably over a year. And it was really, really welcomed. Really welcomed to have tournament basketball, to see that intensity. We didn't even have it a year. It was probably 2 years ago. Those tournaments got canceled pretty early last year. So it's probably been 2 years since we've seen basketball like that. So it was a great week of basketball. There's going to be, obviously, it's going to ramp up even more when the NCAA tournament gets going. So, I just encourage everybody to enjoy it. And hopefully they can pull it off. Hopefully the NCAA can successfully pull off this tournament in the Indianapolis bubble. they have contingency plans in place for if teams get COVID. I'm optimistic that they can pull it off. But hopefully they can because I think we all can have you know, could use a great March Madness tournament to round the season out. I think we're all itching for it, and you know, I know that so many people can't wait to see March Madness again. And there's a whole mess in that with it not there last year. So you know, I'm excited for it to be back, and I just hope people enjoy it.
That's right, March Madness is here. Yeah, we saw some great games in conference play, and now March Madness is here. Like I mentioned, the first four tomorrow after the recording of this podcast, pretty much in the first and second round games this weekend. We'll see how it turns out. Definitely going to be interested to see how this turns out. The Indianapolis bubble, as Alex called it. So it's going to be interesting games. Looking forward to it, folks. So that's going to put a pin on this episode edition of the podcast. Remember, you can catch, if you missed out on any content of the Purple Project podcast, please, you know where to find us. Go download us, listen to us, check it out. Tell your fellow K-Staters about the Purple Project podcast. Folks, that's going to put a close on another edition of the Purple Project podcast this evening here in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex, my co-host, living out there in San Diego, California. We will definitely recap the first and second round games from the Big 12 teams, seven of them, not K-State. Well, not K-State, but there are other teams in the tournament, so we'll be following them and keeping our eyes, like I said, on football. And let's not forget about the other teams as well, which I'll catch up on the dailies as well. Baseball, not Northern Illinois, oh goodness, New Mexico this weekend as well, folks. So go Cats. We will catch you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast. Alex Aiden, my co-host, Eddie Greer. We'll talk to you next time. Alex, we'll do this again next week, sir.
We'll talk to you next week, Eddie.
Are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.